y'all. My name is Peter.
And my name is Carl.
And you're listening to Do You Even Lift, Bro? Men Exercising Social Justice. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We deeply appreciate it. Today, we're going to continue our series on dating. We have a guest today. Say hello to the people.
Hello to the people. My name is Sage.
Awesome. So before we get into the interview with Sage, how you doing, Carl?
I'm all right. I'm excited because this is one of the last ones that we're doing for the season. And Sage and I have been talking about the particular topic of today for a while, I think. And so to finally get it onto a recording to talk about the nuances of his experiences, I'm pumped about. So how are you today, Peter?
I'm pretty tired, but I'm also really excited for the season to come out. I'm very tired, but I'm also really hyped to do this conversation because doing planning with Sage was really awesome. And this is going to be an awesome episode.
Word. So the previous podcast episode, we talked about Tinder, right, Peter?
Yeah.
You, Bailey, and I. And I think what we both realized was through that process, we're like, this is just heteronormative.
Of course, yeah.
And we're better. I don't know if we're better than that necessarily, but we're like, we need to continue to add perspective to this whole dating thing.
Of course.
And Sage and I think, have been talking about it for a while. And so we finally get the chance to do it today.
Awesome. Yeah, this world of dating is so foreign to me. And just talking to Sage about the certain lingo and like what goes into the gay dating scene is just bewildered me. And I'm really glad that I have learned. And I hope y'all do too. So
perfect. Yeah. And so we're going to frame this in a certain way for our listeners, at least. Think about the ways, the cultural ways in which masculine norms sort of penetrate.
Clever.
lots of different cultures. And so, Sage, do you mind sort of talking about your most salient or telling us your most salient identities before we get started?
Yeah, let's get into it. Like they said, my name is Sage. My salient identities mainly identify as a queer individual. Not really sure where I'm at on the whole sexuality thing. So queer is a great place, but I'm predominantly like what people would call gay, I suppose. I also identify as a mixed person racially. So I'm mixed with white and native. Shout out to my natives. In terms of gender, I identify as a cis man. So that's also very important.
Awesome. It's interesting. So this whole podcast is all about masculinity. And what's interesting is that masculinity does, and toxic masculinity does show within the gay dating scene, as Sage and I were talking about. And so our kind of groundwork is that this idea of masculinity still permeates throughout the gay dating scene, even though it's the same in a lot of ways and it's different in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because when I think about gayness or queerness or whatever, I often think about like how it should subvert masculinity, traditional masculinity in a lot of ways, right? Because masculinity, what it means to be a man, is supposed to be like being heterosexual.
Yeah.
And so when I think about what aspects of gay dating should be like good or cool, I think I'm often surprised to hear how not good or not cool it really is. And so Sage, where do you want to start for this particular conversation?
I guess like you kind of actually laid some of the groundwork that I was going to go over, but I guess I'll just go where I'm at. So I want to make sure that there's like this understanding that like masculinity is like a status that's proved to other men, right?
Right.
So like in a gay community, like in the gay community, not a gay community. I mean, there are multiple, but
there you go.
Anyway, different podcast. So there's actually this like greater urgency to prove your masculinity to these other men because that's all there is, right?
Huh. Okay. So in a group of men, I think we've talked about it. Like there's a heightened sense of needing to prove yourself, and you're saying that that's the same case for like gay dating.
Like if you kind of think of it as like a fraternity that no one wants to be in, we're all paying a price to be in it. Kind of like the
interesting. Yeah, okay.
Right. I guess I really want to start off with like addressing something that's I've been thinking about a lot is that there's this common notion that the queer community is so accepting and that everything's just literally like rainbows and sunshine, you know,
and unicorns. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But the reality is like much different. Like there are like different, like there's ugliness to every community. And that's kind of like what I want to make sure everyone knows.
Okay.
Is that to like demystify the queer community.
Word. Because we all got work to do, right?
For real. For real.
I think specifically for me, the phrase that I commonly hear out of like gay dating scenes is like Grindr is the primary avenue of which gay men engage each other in various capacities, much like Tinder is, I think, for hetero folks.
Mm-hmm.
And the most common phrase that I hear coming out of the app is no fats, no femmes, no Asians.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that indicates a lot of different things. That indicates a lot of body privilege. That indicates some level of like reinforcement of gender roles. And then there's like a whole lot of racial going on in there too. And so let's Which one of those three areas do you want to start with?
I feel like we should start with no femmes.
Let's do it.
No femmes, definitely just like femme for those who aren't putting it together. That was rude.
That is a little rude.
All right, so.
We don't think all of our audience is dumb.
So femmes, that really relates to like men who are feminine or have traditional like feminine qualities, right? And there's this whole internalized homophobia against these men, right?
What do you mean internalized?
So in terms of internalization of like oppression, as in this is what it means to be a man, and anything other than that is negative.
Okay.
And so this internalized notion of wanting to prove your masculinity in a traditional sense. So
gotcha.
Having facial hair, having a big body, having lots of muscles, all these things like do still occur in the queer community. So in terms of no femmes, it's really, there's this mask for mask culture, which is masculine for masculine, which is really trying to alienate these feminine men in terms of not engaging with them or only a certain, I guess, populace or group of men.
What I think is interesting is that even within these spaces that you've mentioned, a lot of people think are all accepting and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It is still, and Carl and I have talked about it, it is still not okay to be a woman within these spaces or express feminine qualities.
Definitely. And I think on a, like a really up level for me, it kind of makes sense that gay men are more interested in masculine men, right? Like if we're all indoctrinated with concepts of what masculinity is supposed to be like, and being gay means liking masculinity in like some really dumb way and really like problematic ways, I can see the logic of masculine men who are gay being attracted to masculine men who are gay, right? And so the phrase no femmes is born out of that. What's confusing to me is like not being able to understand your own oppressed experiences as being gay and not translating that to other areas. Does that make sense?
I think so. I think what you really touched on that was like important was the elimination of the feminine in the queer community, or especially in the gay community, specifically the gay community, in terms of all these quote masculine men are looking for other masculine men. And if you're femme, you're not going to be engaged at all. That really like leads into this trying to what some people call masking yourself. It's like putting on a mask of I'm going to affect my voice so that I'm more like deeply voiced, you know, or I'm going to stand up in a certain way and try to make myself appear larger in order to kind of subvert the oppression that comes from being queer. Okay.
And you see that a lot in straight relationships too. Like the man, like in personal experience, whenever like I would be trying to flirt with a woman or something like that, I'd make my voice really low or something like that.
Okay.
And I would definitely try to put off this like facade of masculinity that I might not even harbor myself.
Definitely.
So I think what's interesting about this conversation is how similar it is to heterosexual relationships and the types of oppression that exist there, but in a different context, kind of. But the gender roles are still kept up.
Definitely. And that's like really a good segue into like heteronormativity. That's like imposing these heterosexual like gender roles onto queer relationships. It's kind of like making sure that this like more feminine person or feminine man is seen as a woman and the more masculine man is seen as a man, which is kind of confusing. But
right.
There's like this underlying culture within queer community or the gay community. And I just want to like make sure that everyone knows like and keep in mind that these are like expectations and not reality. Often folks like exist on a spectrum of these roles. Like I myself like try to present more masculine, but I also wear makeup. And for me, I think like going through like the different like journey through masculinity, I've become more comfortable in like associating makeup not with femininity or masculinity, but seeing it more as art. And like, but still recognizing that there are folks who would be like, yeah, you're acting like a woman like by putting on makeup, right?
Okay.
And I think like a lot of what I've heard about the stereotypes of gay relationships is that an outsider would be like, oh, right, who's the man and who's the woman? Definitely. And we've all heard that statement before, but it's interesting that internalized expression is still expressed within gay communities as what you've said. And there are still gender roles and there's still like this idea of like there has to be a man and a woman within a relationship, even though they're both men.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that like, leads into this classification of gay men that leads especially within like a sexual context in terms of top and bottom. So the top, or what's considered a top, is expected to be the man in the relationship and the bottom is expected to be a woman. And this shows up in both sexual and non-sexual contexts. Give me the digits. So a top is being more masculine, like physically having like a very muscular body, being like physically large, like what I was talking about in masking, as well as like physically more than sexual, like having a large penis, like being this man's man. And like in behavior, they're being more like dominant in like the sexual scene, like being the penetrator, like if you're talking about like anal sex or even oral sex. I think it's really important to also relate this to like heteronormative ideas that for a top, sex is focused on his pleasure in terms of he ejaculates first, like he comes first. And like it's focused on making the top feel good and the bottom is supposed to provide that for them. And I guess for the bottom, like traditionally is supposed to be more feminine in quotes, obviously. And they're supposed to be physically like smaller than this man who's supposed to be like the top. Behaviorally, they're like more passive, like they're to be like subordinated. Like I was saying earlier, they're expected to help the top come more than anything, and their pleasure is second.
I remember conversations between us around like body hair is a component in that. Definitely. And then maybe specifically race is also a component in that. And that's where some of the no Asian stuff comes in and that's probably specifically East Asian men.
Yes.
Where there's a cross now here between gender, sexuality, and race around the way we construct certain races in terms of their sexual prowess. And my question is like, is there value set in these roles, if you will? Like, is there more value in being a top or mask and white or black and Latino in the gay male community versus being smaller, more effeminate and Asian in terms of having less value in either relationships or in sex?
Definitely. Like, I definitely like observed that in my like own experience, like being on apps or like engaging with other queer folks and having these men who identify as Asian like talk about their experience of like being expected to be subordinate, being expected to be a bottom, and kind of like this like earlier saying that masculinity is a status proved other men, this like urgency in themselves to prove themselves in other masculine ways. So I know a lot of queer like Asian men are like gym bunnies. Like they just go into the gym and they
gym
try to
bunnies.
Get, yeah. So there's like a whole nother classification based on body size and body type in the gay community.
Say more.
So the traditional like masculine feature, that's like a hunk or like a jock, you know?
Okay.
And then
what's a bear?
A bear. Okay. So a bear is usually it's interesting because like it's based on age too.
Okay.
Like an older man, typically, let's say white, let's go there.
Okay.
And also having like more body hair across his entire body, you know, everywhere, including his face.
What's an otter?
An otter is like a slimmer version of a bear, kind of like, but not a cub. Cub is a very like it's a younger bear. Like
there's so much.
Like, welcome to the taxonomy of queer
gay man 101
for real. And it's like an otter, like being slimmer but also still having body hair. And then if you're slimmer but don't have body hair, you're classified as a twink.
Okay,
a twink.
Twink. Is that off of Twinkie?
I don't actually know.
Okay.
I don't remember. Like, honestly, if I'm being transparent.
Other animals?
Other animals. Wolves.
Wolves. What's
wolves
a wolf?
Exists. They're typically the gym bunny, but older. And typically, they're kind of the predator version.
Okay.
Not in like a... In more of like the seeker, like this dominant man, like instead of being a bunny, I'm like, oh my God, I just like
where you're hunted. Yes. Fluffy and cute.
Yes. It's like the wolf is the hunter.
Fascinating.
Very dominantly masculine, typically has facial hair, is swole. Usually,
swole, is that what you said?
Swole, like some lots of muscles. I thought this was called, do you even lift, bro?
That's the question.
And they definitely lift, bro. So, other classification questions.
The stereotypical masculine body, I think we understand, is like cut, rip, six pack, eight pack, whatever. And so is there like a not classification, but maybe tiers or like a hierarchy of body type?
Yes.
What's that?
Definitely. Like, so there's this app called Scruff, and it's like a global app, and there's this part in it where it says like most wolfed. So it's kind of like you woof at people, kind of like dogs. I don't know. Which is like a whole nother thing because it's called like scruffy or whatever, like a dog. Anyway, so you get to woof at these people, which is like a non-actual message way of interacting with them. And they have like profiles and they have like most woofed in the last hour, most woofed like this, whatever. And all of the men look the same. They're all generic white men, typically like, and in this like app, it's more of the bear to like muscle daddy kind of thing.
Okay.
If we're going there, I remember just being astounded by literally someone taking a Xerox of this one man and putting it on all of these profiles, like literally the same man.
I think what I'm sort of picking up in this conversation so far is like, it's not enough to be a marginalized, have one marginalized identity. Like the process of social justice, the reason why we're doing this is it's a great examination into the ways in which problematic masculinity can filter into like anybody's life and then become expressed in very problematic ways. And so I do eventually want to get to how you, Sage, personally subvert and deal with that in the context of the stuff that you've learned in like Men in the Movement and stuff, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But is there any other aspect of gay men dating that you wanted to bring out to sort of further highlight the ways in which problematic masculinity impacts the gay man community?
So definitely like the non-sexual part that I was talking about earlier, just in interactions. Peter and I were talking about this last week, and the top is expected to be like this go-getter, the initiator of conversation, like very forward in speaking, makes decisions. Like if you're talking about an actual like romantic relationship or even just reaching out on an app, a top is expected to initiate that conversation.
What was that meme that you showed me?
Oh,
was
the meme. The okay.
So I think this is interesting. Hilarious.
So there's actually this meme of that bottoms will stop typing when they see the typing bubble come up in Messenger. So if like,
damn.
So it's a meme, which is like, supposed like, you know, parody is actually like targeting real issues. And it's like the bottoms are supposed to be like passive in conversation. And so if you're a bottom texting a top and the bubble comes up, you're expected to like stop typing, like delete what you have and then wait for their response.
So they basically get their voice taken away.
Yes.
That's what I think is so interesting, is that this, like what you've been saying, like this femme body as a twink. Mm-hmm. I like, there's all these cool words for all these other classifications, like mm-hmm. wolf and like otter and like bear. And then the one that kind of diverts a little bit away from that masculine identity is called a twink, which mm-hmm. I think is a very offensive term. Like if I got called a twink, I'd be very offended. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't sound as in prestige as a, mm-hmm. like a wolf or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And I think you bring up like a really, you got the cogs turning in my brain, thinking of like who is popular, who is seen in like dominant culture, like mm-hmm. seen as like on TV, like the, who's popular. Gay people who are popular in the media actually fall into the twink category a lot of the time. Okay. Or they fall into this like average, slim to average size body. And typically, I mean, they're white, they're able-bodied. And so it's interesting, like on a dating app, a twink is seen in like a negative way. Socially, they're who people point to.
Okay,
like Troye Sivan, like
queer eye guys are twinks.
Not all of them are.
Okay, some of them are buff.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I think the only one, like, and even Jonathan isn't a twink, like none of them are actually like twinks.
Huh.
Queer Eye is a fantastic actual like representation of what is expected physically in the gay community. Like all of them are able-bodied. Jonathan's the only one who isn't actually like has any kind of like muscle mass, like he's just existing. And but I think that's like his role in the show, right? Be accepting of his body and like all this, and like I love him for that. Like when you look at the other folks like Anthony or Tan and Karamo, like they're all very muscular. Hmm. I mean, Bobby isn't like muscular, but he's enacting masculinity in this like I can build things kind of way.
Okay.
Like when you think about it, like that's the way he's bringing out masculinity. The only one that really, I don't want to say only one, but the only person who's like challenging masculinity like very like intentionally, it seems like it's Jonathan.
Mm.
And I think that's why like a lot of the gay community is like, yes, Jonathan, go queen. Because he's like challenging these norms.
So there's a difference between the media's ideal for what a gay person looks like and what the gay community
an actual ideal. Dating. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it seems like what you said about the twink being the most represented within mainstream media, it mm-hmm. seems like a lot of people are threatened by the gay community. Mm-hmm. So they find the most feminine and most non-threatening idea of what a gay man is, and that looks like it to be the twink instead of anything else. So that still goes along with gender roles, as the more feminine you are, the less threatening you are. So the more accepting the mass media will be with this identity and culture.
Yeah, this like gay poster child kind of thing.
It's f***ed up.
For real.
I hate it.
Thank you. Perfect. And so, Sage, in what ways do you then engage in the gay dating scene that is gay man dating scene that is subversive or creates change, or like, what do you do?
I guess for me, like after being in Men in the Movement and becoming more like socially aware of like these power dynamics, like through my different classes and just in introspection, I came to more identify like myself as like verse. And so verse is, you can be a top or a bottom. It's kind of like this middle ground.
Just short for something?
Versatile.
Gotcha.
Yeah, versatile. Like kind of like, I almost said a tool, but I'm not a tool, so I don't know. jack of all trades.
There we go.
So jack of all trades, master of none. A master of none, no dominance here. anyway, so like that's like what I'm doing is like, I don't want to be put in either category, like challenging this binary, like this false dichotomy that is supposed to exist. But I still see this like pressure to adhere to this like box or these boxes. So like a lot of times, like if someone has like in myself, like having verse on my profile, people are like, so are you a top or a bottom? And it's like, can you not read? Like, I mean, obviously you know how to use words because you got this app downloaded, but like for me, it's just like not engaging in this, like, am I a top or a bottom? Like I'm neither and I'm both at the same time. And I think that like, I guess leading back into like my own identity, like as a mixed person too, like I'm not white or native, I'm both, and trying to straddle this like oppression that is there and trying to like, in, I guess in terms of actually like challenging it is by existing.
Cool.
Which is like prophetic and everything, but actually like engaging with everyone instead of trying to only engage with like these masculine men or this body type, because I don't have that body type. I don't have the dominant body type. Like I'm a heavier set dude. Like that's just my reality. And if people interact with me, I don't let them like try to put these stereotypes on myself. I will wear makeup and I will link to my Instagram profile. Like you will see me looking fierce. And if you have a problem with it, that's your problem. It's not mine.
So for men who are listening, who identify as queer or gay, and they want to get out of this box, what are some simple steps or some like beginner steps that they could take to try and subvert this masculinity?
The first thing like that really changed where I'm coming from was actually being intentional and learning about what masculinity is or what it can be. Like learning for me that there's not a masculinity, there are masculinities. Like it's a pluralized existence, right? And realizing like internally that I can make my masculinity whatever I want it to be. And I mean, obviously it sounds great on paper, but there will be folks that try to put you back into boxes. And that's like one of the major things that occurs. And it's just stay strong. But also like just trying to gain this like confidence in yourself, in your masculinity, and finding folks that are also like trying to like, I guess, bend and break and destroy these boxes that exist, and just, yeah, just engaging with other men and bringing up these like conversations of like, so I've noticed that being a top is like being the man. How do you feel about that? And like being intentional with your understanding of who you are as a person, and knowing that that's a continual process is really important as well. Cause I don't have this masculinity thing figured out. Like I'm still working through it.
Word. Anything you want to add before we talk about you?
In terms of like relating back to the sex conversation, if you relate it to like pornography or to dominance, like tops are expected to like tear up that or bottoms are seen like this objectified way.
Okay.
Of like, you are the vessel of his like enjoyment, right? This relates to this like objectification of the man seen as the woman, which relates back to misogyny, which is like the basis of homophobia, right?
I think it's a really interesting intersection of the way homophobia is taught in all men also strips us of the ability to be intimate with each other. And so when that gets intensified in gay sex specifically, then like it sounds like it becomes more violent. It sounds like it becomes less about two people being together and more about dominance and power and like getting off in ways that align with very like problematic heterosexualities and masculinities.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Like Peter and I were talking last week about like with this objectification that a bottom is just a hole to fill.
That's really interesting how it's like still objectified and those gender roles are still implemented, because that idea of like just a hole to fill reminds me a lot of heterosexual relationships when there are problematic men within the scene. So I don't know, like I think the what most interesting part about this conversation is we wanted to get into all like a more diverse perspective on relationships and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the same oppression or different, the same oppression expressed in different ways are still enacted in different communities.
Yeah, there's definitely like these like similitudes between like oppressions. I guess one that I really think about is adherence to traditional masculinity, like masculine norms, as like, if you are feminine, quote, in these other ways, like you don't have the perfect body, you don't have like all these things. Like if you are fat, you're also expected to amp up your masculinity. So in terms of like what I think about is in relation to like women, if like you are like a like heavier set woman, you're expected to be perfect at makeup, wear like fantastic clothes, all these things. It's very similar, especially for men. Like if you are a heavier set man, you're expected to have a lot of facial hair. You're expected to have a lower voice. You're expected to be more dominant in these other ways that you can make up for, not physically. I really wanted to put that in there because I think it's a really important
word.
Well, thanks so much for sharing, Sage. It's really interesting to get a lot more perspectives on this channel, especially when it comes to dating, because it is a very confusing scene for everyone involved.
Agreed.
Yeah. So thank you so much for sharing. I think you've enlightened a lot of, you've enlightened me at least about the gay community with when it comes to dating. So we always talk to our guests about their journey through masculinity. And I was wondering if you could tell us your story about masculinity.
Yeah. So I guess I'll just start from the beginning. Coming out of my mother's womb.
Gross.
Gross. Oh my God. Actually,
it's not gross.
It's true. It's just natural.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't come out of the womb. Like I was ripped from my mother's womb. I'm actually a platinum gay.
I don't know what that means.
So that means that since I've never touched a vagina, like
C-section?
I was, yes, I was C-section and
oh my God,
cause there's like, just, I guess, never mind. I'm technically a gold. I'm yeah. I've touched a vagina.
There's
never
different
mind.
Levels like, to this too.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So like,
there's such high value then. And like this, the intensity of the demonization of feminization or like the female body is intense.
Mm-hmm.
Platinum gay. Okay.
Platinum gay, never touching a vagina. And then there's gold star gay, like if you were born through the vaginal canal. I was a platinum gay. Was. And so being raised, I was raised in South Dakota, which as some of y'all might not know, is a super conservative state where like queerness is basically demonization. There are a lot of like values still attached to the hetero relationship. And I grew up in a ranching community, which is basically like masculinity on steroids. because like if I grew up in like a city in South Dakota, it might have been a little different because there'd be like actually other like queer people. Yeah. So I was raised in a town of 300, Little White River, South Dakota. And just basically like growing up on the ranch, being told to cowboy up, basically equal like man up. Or if you cried, like man up, get over it. Also, I guess in relation to masculinity and like gender norms, growing up on the ranch, like I was expected to go out and do like the dirty work while my sister like stayed in and like cooked and cleaned and like all this stuff. And I was actually thinking about this a while ago that I never like up until like coming to college, like I didn't have to do a lot of like household stuff just because like my family was very like traditional, like in terms of like gender norms. Like my mom cooked, my mom cleaned, all these things. And if I had to do chores, I had to go chop wood.
Okay.
Like, and so it's like,
we're not gonna make a joke there.
But anyway, so yeah, in terms of like chores and like stuff like that, I was just expected to do the more masculine things. Even if I like, once I did come out, I was expected to do more Like,
gotcha.
It was like, all right, if you can be gay, but just do it this way. Like, make sure that you're still masculine in like all these other ways. Like, don't be that gay. There was a special kind of gay that I was expected to be.
Okay.
But I didn't do any of that. it was kind of like a revolt in a way, because my sexuality is very tightly interwoven with my gender. I said, screw y'all to all of this in terms of I was still doing like all the ranch stuff and like being masculine in that way. But once I was in plays, I was in choir, I was in all these like traditionally like feminine, like the arts kind of things. Mm-hmm. And it was really just like, that was my challenge to masculinity, my challenge to being straight in this community. I guess like whenever I came to college, like I just had this like, all right, I've been trying to be this like masculine person for so long and I'm just tired of it. Like, I like being in choir. I like being in these like feminine quote things. And it was by joining like Men in the Movement that I realized like the things I've been experiencing have a name, and the way that I've internalized this like I can't internalize misogyny because I'm not a woman, but like I've like adhered.
You can internalize misogyny, yeah, for sure. Like, there's such thing as internalized dominance too, right? Like internalizing the fact that you are better than someone.
Yeah, there it is. Like I've internalized these messages about what it means to be a man. And it was a lot of unlearning, and I'm still doing so much of that unlearning, especially like now that I've come into this new acceptance of my masculinity and this pluralization of my masculinity. I can wear makeup, but I can also go fix my truck. Like, I can also do all these things that are traditionally masculine, and I can do these things that are traditionally feminine, and that's okay. That's my masculinity.
Word.
Awesome.
Thank you for sharing.
Of course.
You talked a little bit about ranch culture. Specifically, you were expected to be a certain type of gay. What was it in you that rebelled against that? Like, what in your experience kind of primed you to be like, you know what? F*** you guys, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I was channeling my inner Cartman there. You, like, I'm going to do me in a place that I imagine is pretty dangerous to be out as gay. And so can you talk about like how you were primed to be able to do that in the first place?
So I'm thinking back, like I grew up in a family of very strong women, strong Native women, strong women in general. All my cousins, like I was the only male cousin out of like 10 grandkids. And so I grew up playing house and like all these things, but also going out and doing like the ranch work. Like after I was done with the ranch work, I went back inside and played house with the girls.
Okay.
Right. And I think like that like primed me in order to have this, like, I can do these things at the same time. And like, as I grew older, like my parents and like going to school, a lot of like the teachers were also like in the ranching community. Like they were families. They were like, yeah, you should go play with the boys and like all this stuff. And it was like, they're dirty. Like, like they're stupid. Like, cool. Like, I'm chilling. Thank you. And so like, I just had like one of my best friends that goes to school here. Shout out to Julia. She was with me through that whole thing. Okay. And it was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to accept you as you are. And I think like that was like really like a major key for me, was just finding the folks at that school. Like the school that I graduated from had like 100 people, and like there were 28 people in my class.
Oh, damn. Gosh.
And so finding these folks who were supportive of me as a person was like really primed me to like even feel comfortable to come out in this place. Because even after I came out, like I messed around with this dude, and shortly, like both of our families were like in ranching community, like were connected to the ranching community. And after we did it, he was just like, if you tell anyone, I'll kill you. Yeah. And he was crazy enough that I believed him because he,
guns.
Yeah, very much so. And so I guess like that also shaped my experience, which I totally must have forgotten about. Probably trauma. But definitely just like finding these folks who were like, maybe they weren't gay, but like were accepting of who I was. And just like feeling comfortable, like expressing my femininity around them, like my whatever femininity is,
right?
Not straightness. Like just having these folks who supported me in the way that I identified and didn't question it was really important. And I came out for the first person I came out to was my sister in 2013. So it's been almost over five years. And I just told her and she accepted me in the way that I was. And then I was like, hell yeah, here we go. And I just like started coming out to like different people. I didn't tell my dad for like 3 years. So I came out to him after I came out to him and he didn't like, he didn't take it bad, but he wasn't also like, yay, like you're gay. Like he was like, you know what? You love who you love. And if you're safe, that's all that matters.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Which was totally unexpected because like, he's like a man of color too. And so like, there's a whole like different layers on top of that too. Him just like saying like, yeah, you're gay and I still love you, but also we're going to like enroll you in some like fighting classes or like,
fascinating.
Okay. I'm like, okay, risk reduction strategies. Like there they are. They don't work. I mean, they can work, but anyway. So yeah, there's definitely that. And after coming out to my dad and like going to the city, AKA a town of like a little bit more than me, it was kind of like, I just started being who I was and not hiding. And after that summer in Rapid City, I just came back to White River and was like, I'm going to be gay and I don't care.
Okay.
And that's when I had people like start calling me and stuff like that. Like, I'm sorry for folks who are triggered by that word.
It gets bleeped in.
Okay. Getting called expletives and
the F word.
The F word. And but not. Oh my God. That's so funny. Anyway, and just being like, I don't care, bro. Like, go be with your girlfriend. Like, I don't care. Like, she's sitting right next to me. Like, we're friends. Like, okay. And yeah, just like coming to college and just like realizing that there's so much more in this world and that there's so many more masculinities that I can make my own. That was like really, really shaped my experience and continues to shape my experience.
Word. Well, thank you, Sage, for sharing a piece of you with us today. We do also like to get to know people on a different level, so is it cool if we transition into some rapid-fire questions?
I'm down.
That's what's up. I got one.
Okay, yeah, you go first.
Favorite geological formation?
Favorite geological formation? Can it be specific?
You want me to be specific?
No, can it be specific?
Whatever you want, man. It's your question to answer.
My favorite geological formation is probably the Badlands in South Dakota. They're lit. They're also going to be gone in like a while, yeah. But it's fine.
Not
erosion.
What's your favorite holiday?
Oh, I hate holidays. I don't celebrate anything except my birthday.
Hey, that's
my birthday is my holiday. There yes. 21 girl.
Woo. Favorite type of cow.
Favorite type of cow, Black Angus. I was actually, my dad was going to name me Angus. And then my mom, like after she came out of surgery, was like, give me that birth certificate. And so now I'm really? Sage. And so now I'm Sage. Yeah. He's like, I'm going to name you Angus after cows. And I'm like, thank God. Like, bless up. Anyway.
What's your favorite type of makeup?
My favorite type of girl. Let me think. Hold on. Rapid fire. Okay. So I think I'm just getting into eyeshadow and I look fierce. So there's that. Oh, lipstick, actually.
Lipstick.
Lipstick's my
lit.
Favorite name for a cow.
Favorite name for a cow. Lulu. We actually had a cow named Lulu. She lost her ears.
Oh, what?
Because she was born like super like early in the year. And so they froze off.
Ooh. Okay.
Poor Lulu. R.I.P. Oh, she's still alive. Never mind. I go see her whenever I'm going to see her on break.
Oh, hell yeah. What's your favorite article of clothing?
Actually, underwear. Like,
I did not expect that.
That's different kinds of like, it's, I love
pair.
Yes. I actually have these like, they're kind of like teal, like mint teal ones. They're, I love underwear so much because never mind. Fetish. But
radical.
Favorite ranch instrument.
Favorite ranch instrument.
Or tool.
Tool. Me. I honestly love, that's called a potato bar.
Potato bar.
A potato bar.
Please say more.
We both ranch, like my family both ranches and farms.
Okay.
But predominantly cattle ranching. But there's this thing called the potato bar. And I don't actually like it because it's like 80 pounds. It's literally a bar that is used to get the dirt and like the soil off of the, what's it called?
Potato?
No, I don't know why it's called a potato potato bar, but that's what we call it. It's yeah, like you get it out, you get the, like off of the. I'm gonna be my mom's gonna be so embarrassed that I exist. she's gonna be so mad.
Potato bar. Get dirt off of
something.
Is it another instrument?
Yeah, it's a
tractor
tiller. The tiller. You get dirt off the till.
Okay.
Because it'll get plugged up and then all the work that you do, all the ranching or all the farming you do for 10 hours is worthless because your rows are Potato bar. Also my favorite vegetable. Because they're versatile, like me.
Okay.
They sure as hell are.
Well done.
Please keep my laugh in there.
The gaggle, it'll be there.
I think we should end on potato bar.
Potato bar it is. Thank you so much, Sage. We really, really, really appreciate your story.
Definitely.
I really liked sharing it, and I hope I don't seem ignorant.
Try not to make you sound ignorant. And that will do it for this episode of Do You Even Lift, Bro? Men Exercising Social Justice. If you have feedback, thoughts, comments, questions, or want to be interviewed for a podcast, please email wjac@colostate.edu. That's wjac@colostate.edu. Huge shout out to the partnership between the Women and Gender Advocacy Center and KCSU here at Colorado State University. These are the folks that even allow this podcast to happen. For more content about masculinities, check out meninthemovement.blogspot.com. And for more information about the WJAC, go to wjac.colostate.edu. For more 90.5 KCSU content, go to kcsufm.com. Music production by Xavier Hadley, aka Zavley. Check him out at soundcloud.com/Xavier Hadley. That's XAVIERHADLEY. Thanks for listening, everyone. Deuces. Woo!
It's interesting because like whenever, all right, so have you heard of
no,
so it's literally but so it's a
oh god,
and so
do we have to bleep that?
I'm sure we could get away with being in there.
Okay. I said
this episode's yeah, gonna be so, hard to edit.
I'm sorry.
Hard.
Anyway, that's erasure of people with like erectile dysfunction. Anyway, so yeah, platinum gay.
Oh god.
Sorry.